Test 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4. Test. Test 1. How far do you go back?
60.
Really? What was your
there
first?
There wasn't much before that.
Oh, that. What was your first kind of first gig? First sort of thing?
It was, in those days, it was all dance halls.
Like socials?
Anything? Just church dances.
Right.
Sunday CYO to church dances. And there was dance halls everywhere. Was there a call? Crank Plaza, Gorge Rock. I mean, they all had bands. And that's where we played.
What kind of band?
The drinking age was 21 in those days.
Right.
You know, when you're 15.
Yeah.
You can't get into those places. When I was 17, I got in and played on Youngster Fest. Playing the clubs since I was 17 and youngster.
And what was your instrument?
Sax.
Sax, eh? Oh, wow. And what kind of bands? Were you in like dance bands or rock bands? Rock and roll bands? Rock and roll bands.
I was on Little Caesar
concerts. Not religious there.
Is it? Before that was Little Dan, the Starlights.
I mean that to a certain extent, but not.
That's a long time ago.
Yeah, well, I mean, were there any clubs at all? Like any kind of.
Alcohol clubs?
Yeah.
Smuggled your Mickey in. No, they didn't serve alcohol at all. There was enough trouble with that.
Lots of fights?
Oh, every week.
Really?
Every place.
You didn't show up at gigs kind of expecting it sort of thing?
Oh yeah, you knew it was good. They never bothered the bands.
Yeah.
Except for Clayton Thomas, he got in a big bash up one night at Crane Plaza. Oh, they didn't bother the bands.
So they were throwing stuff at the bands or something?
Oh, fight.
Just fights.
Clayton Thomas is like that.
He's a brawler.
Always was.
Right. You played in his band too? Oh, you saw him?
Nope. They all played the same circuit.
Right.
There was a few bands around those days. Not a whole lot.
Right. A lot of competition? In terms of gigs?
Yeah, because there was lots of places to play.
Really?
Now there's none. There's lots of bars. They don't pay any money. In those days, there wasn't big money either.
Was it just like a matter of like you were 15 and it was just a big enough thrill just to be up there doing your thing? Like, do you remember your first gig?
My first gig? My first live gig would have to be, at Hagerman's Hall.
Where's that?
It's, you know where the new City Hall is?
Yeah.
Just on the north side of the, in a laneway. Up on top of the Nanking Tower. That was back probably 1968.
Do you remember being pretty freaked out by it? Did you know what to expect when you went in there?
I just went up and did it.
Yeah.
Played at house parties and shit like that.
Do you have a favorite gig from those times? Time when you were playing and you just thought, this is the fucking best.
Once you got to Mizark Hall in those days, you did well. That was where all the top bands played, all the important bands, all the black bands from the States played.
Right.
And that was probably the top ball in the city. Which you hit there, that was it.
Would you share the bill with any of these, doing that kind of thing?
No, you'd headline.
Yeah. What were some of the people you played with, some of the people in the band? Did you play with a lot of musicians that really opened your eyes? Like people you really looked up to, that kind of thing?
Oh, a lot of good musicians. They're still around. Some of them are still around playing. A lot of them are not. Some of them are dead.
Yeah.
Jerry Penfold used to be with the Hawks in the early days.
Right.
He used to come up here and used to jam work. He's gone. A ton of them that are gone. To sit here and name them like this.
Sure.
But playing on the big shows was great. Yeah, playing with the Beach Boys, you know, B.B. King. I used to be in Down Jump. I was in the big band.
Okay, yeah, right. Amazing.
Right. Flip Flop and Fly, that's me playing baritone sax.
Is that right?
And I did the early stuff with the Mandala.
Right. Awesome. I talked to Don Walsh from Hazel, Florida. I talked to him.
See, those, they were the next generation.
Right.
So, and I played all through that generation. I just stopped playing in 94.
After the dance hall thing, where did you go from there? Like, what sort of...
Well, from there, the only clubs that opened up to us was Le Cocteau and Friars. It was down on Victoria and Richmond and Victoria. It was at Starlight Lounge or something.
What was the scene at Le Cocteau? Like, what kind of place was that?
It was a drinking hole. The Derby opened up in the later years.
The Derby, man. Parliament King.
No, the Brown Derby.
Oh, the Brown Derby.
But that was a long gig. They were lounge bands, but the younger guys got in after a while.
Cocteau, a rough place, was it?
It could be, yeah.
Yeah? Do you ever do the biker circuit, that kind of thing? Were there ever bars like that where...
Just like biker parties. Those bands.
What were they like?
Oh, fine. Yeah. Paid well. Lots of booze. Never got in trouble. Nobody bothered you. Biker bars, not really. They kept it to themselves in those days.
Right.
Now they're, well, so the saying goes, you know, they run the strippers.
Sure.
But it wasn't like that.
Right. And did you go straight from playing to managing, or was it where you were doing both at the same time? Kind
both.
Of
yeah. I was playing and managing. I was with Downchop in the beginning when we took, in 72, we opened SRO.
Right.
And then I played with Downchild through 73.
Is Downchild, were they on SRO, Downchild? No.
We managed Donnie for a little while.
Right. Well, what a lot of people don't realize about SRO and a lot of the success at that spot is that you guys were pretty much just an independent label. I mean, you guys were just doing it with your own money, your own... And in a way, when you think about it, music history in Canada, it's one of the, really should go down as one of the greatest success stories.
There's others, it's Albert and Attic.
Yeah.
You know, Terry Flood did it in Montreal. Donald had their label of Warriors. But Anthem at one time was probably the most successful, the biggest company. It's probably Attic is now the largest independent in this country.
Right. A lot of people, though, look at like Rush and Max Webster and don't think that those bands could have been spawned from, you know, a DIY kind of approach, but that's how they were, in fact. Do you remember the first time you saw Max Webster, first time you saw Rush?
Oh, yeah. I guess I saw Rush first at the Abbey Road Club.
What, sorry?
Abbey Road Club. That was above George's Spaghetti House. Queen Street. Max Webster. Is this I knew Mike. Well, Mike worked at a music shop.
Mike Teeter.
As an agent. Tilton. And had his band. Of course, our office at one time worked in the same building. So. I don't remember when I first saw him. I couldn't tell you.
A lot of people compare those two bands, both being equally important as influences on musicians here and throughout the country. But in fact, musically, they're pretty different, but also had similarities. Are there any way you can compare the two? And maybe...
Kim Mitchell was more off the wall than getting lit, you know? Are they similar? Compatible more than similar.
Right.
We toured Max in front of Rush a lot. Didn't happen in America.
Why do you figure it didn't happen?
Kim still had trouble in America.
Yeah.
Lots of bands in Canada that never made it in America. Look at where the hip are. Huge in this country. They do well in America, but... They're not doing the 15,000-seaters, you know.
Right.
But if you don't pursue it...
Does it matter, do you think?
Don't know.
Did it matter to you?
Yeah.
Did it matter to you?
Sure. You gotta have the belief. If you believe in what you're doing. If you don't deliver, take it all away. It didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we're open.
I remember as a kid the New Year's Eve shows with both those guys, and that must have been terribly exciting. I mean, those were brilliant homecoming gigs in a lot of ways.
We were the first to sell three nights out of Paris for Rush.
Is that with Max three times?
No, Rush.
Right, but it was with the double bill? Or?
I think once was a double bill,
right.
And then 1 year Max headlined it.
Right.
I'm not sure how many times you've done it. Think back.
Were those significant achievements for you? Those kind of shows?
Yeah, hometown band, fill up an arena like that, you know, especially three times. I don't think anybody else has done it since. So.
Thanks a lot.
Do you have sugar?
Please, and milk if you don't mind.
But, you know, it's hard work from the guys, you know.
Sure.
There's lots of those on guys in the city, but they deliver. You know, they went out there and delivered, so.
Mm-hmm. For you, being in a place like the Gardens, was that a special? Was that?
Yeah. Massey Hall was special to me. But before we got there, I mean, we were in those arenas in America. The guys were playing with their idols.
Really?
To see that happen.
Like who?
You're right. It was the first shows they did.
Really?
They thought the world of that band.
Would you? So you went on the road with them?
In the early days, I won for a short period of time. Then I did. Ray used to do North America, and I did outside in Europe,
right.
Japan.
Okay.
We split it up that way.
What the kind of Canadian tours you would?
But I never traveled with them.
Never traveled with them, man. Yeah.
First European tour, I went with them. Well, we took Max Webster on a European tour.
Right.
I went with them.
Right.
But other than that, I didn't.
Right.
Yeah, road managers.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Was Wireless another band that you guys worked with as well?
Liverpool. Liverpool together in 1973.
Liverpool, were they from Etobicoke? Do you remember?
Two guys from out west, Gary O'Connor. Three of them were from out west. One was from Toronto. Two of them were from Toronto. There was a couple of guitar players, Shuffles, and that. That was the band that made money for us.
Really? Because they were primarily a cover kind of group or a tribute band?
All they did was beat us. Work every day.
Sure.
It's nice if you got that bass there. So.
Yeah. I guess it's just a matter of building on it from that or whatever. When you look at music now in Canada, do you think it's achieved the kind of success that you might have envisioned when you guys were first started?
Internationally?
Nationally. Is it as much of a boom as people say it is, do you think?
A boom?
Yeah.
Costs them a lot more money to do it now. That's the old thing. If you got a record company that wants to put a ton of money in you, then Warner Brothers could virtually make anybody a star if they wanted to with their machine.
Right.
You know, but it's good for the country. Do I like it all? No, but that's just personal taste.
Yeah. Sure.
Internationally, there's some big bands come out of here, huge bands. But a lot of them have been huge in this country and couldn't get arrested.
Mm-hmm.
Not, at one point, the U.S. was about 50% of the market. They're about 40-ish now.
Right.
35-40% of the world market. It's right next door. But it's a big wall at that border. It's a hassle. It's not so bad now, but in the early days, it was brutal.
With bands, in what sense was it? What sense?
Just red tape.
Red tape, yeah. Did you find at one point bands were maybe putting too much on the line to go and try to achieve success outside and worrying less about success at home?
Well, if you want to make it to the top, you got to leave the country. Not literally leave it, but you got to play outside the country. You can make a very comfortable living. There's lots of guys. Vald makes a very comfortable living still today. He's a guy from the 70s. He just goes back and forth across the country. There's lots of guys who just make a very comfortable living. But if you want to be a star, you're going to step out of here and expand. You can live here and stay here. All the guys in Russia, they still live here. Could have left, sure, for tax reasons. But
sure.
Chose to stay here.
Yeah.
I could have left. Ray could have left. I mean, we all could have left.
Why do you think they stayed? You stayed?
I don't know. It's home. Brian Adams, he's gone. He lives in England, I think. Frank Mills moved away. He was in the Bahamas for a long time. Now he's in the States. But those groups are tax groups. And you can't blame them. You start paying 62% of your income on taxes. Yeah, that's why Rolling Stones, their office is not in England. I think it's in France, actually. I could be wrong, but it used to be in France.
Right.
If you were sitting there and somebody was making $1 gazillion a year and you were the government, wouldn't you offer them a deal to get the piece of that action? And that's what they do. They don't do that here. But here there's tax, not loopholes, where you can put your money away.
Right.
As an artist.
Right.
And not pay tax until you draw it. It's like an RSP. It's an annuity. It's for years to come. So you're not taxed that money, but eventually.
Right.
That's only available to the artists. Because they figure they can only do it once. Managers don't have that ability. Because, you can do that again. Well, little do they know, you can't. And a lot of people have tried.
Right.
The first one is very, very hard. The second one is even harder.
Yeah.
Unless you fall into it. But if you pick them up while they're already up. And that's happened with Bruce Allen. He went from BTO to Brian Adams. And then he took a shot at Anne Murray. Nothing's developed from there. But Anne's old. It's over. Go to Vegas.
Yeah.
And then come home.
I'm working for the year.
Yeah.
Yes.
And with success comes problems.
I've got one more call to do when the customer gets back to the curtain. They've gone into Western Road.
Yeah.
So I won't be able to.
Were there problems that you personally had to deal with in terms of Rush's growing success, in terms of what you wanted?
It wasn't just Rush. Every musician that dealt with they had problems and come to you.
Right.
That's what you're there for. Yeah. That's what your job is. You manage their career. They got their problems or your problems.
Was Max Webster harder to deal with in that sense than Rush were?
More independent than Rush.
There was
not only the guys in the band, but there was the outside source, which was quite Dubois. So he was another factor that we had no control over. He was just a writer. So. Whereas Rush, they all worked together. It was one unit.
So Pye was like giving them, trying to give them direction in terms of their career sort of thing?
No, it's just there's one link that you have no control over. So,
right.
But it was a bad link.
Right.
When Pye stopped writing with him, it kind of, and then Pye came back to him.
Yeah.
I haven't heard much of him lately. I haven't talked to Tom Berry in a while.
Right.
I don't know what he's doing. But see, Tom's got, what's her name?
Holly Cole.
Holly Cole?
Yeah.
He's doing well with Holly.
For a while, yeah. Yeah.
Depends what you put into it.
Again, getting back to the Max Webster thing, are there gigs that you remember, specific Max Webster gigs, where you remember being totally blown away by their performances at one particular show.
Yeah, one of the best shows I see. Well, when they're on the big stage, that's one thing. But into is the Knob Hill. They did really well out there. Yeah, I'm not at those gigs. Sorry to say.
Yeah.
The gigs that you're at, and you walk out there, and there's 15,000 kids on their feet. You know, sure makes you feel good.
Totally. Yeah. Did you ever play to crowds that big?
Yeah.
What sort of shows? With whom?
Beach Boys. Last show I played with Down Child, although it wasn't a huge crowd. When you share the stage with B.B. King, you can't go any further, you know.
He came up and jammed.
No, he was headlining.
Right.
The show. And then James Cotton.
Right.
He was number two at that time. Still was probably two.
Sure.
If he's still alive and kicking. The old guys that you looked up to.
Yeah.
That you bought their albums. When you're, you know, when you're 15, you're buying their albums.
Heroes.
And when you're like 27 or 28, you're on stage with them. It's a good feeling.
Do you think it's become harder or easier to tour Canada these days? Do you think there's a better circuit in place, a better formula for touring the country? Because it's an impossible thing to tour, what do you think about it?
It's a big country. You go from Halifax to Montreal to Toronto to Winnipeg, you know. Depends on your status, on what kind of tour. There's lots of soft seaters. There's lots of big arenas. It's hell because it's so bloody wide. It's not like in America you can go play all across the country. Here you do your plane rides over here. It's expensive.
Remember the first time we played in England was our road manager, we played a gig and the road manager said, okay, so, you know, the lobby call will be for noon tomorrow. We went like, that's ridiculously late, but the gig was like 3 hours away. We were just so used to getting up at 8 o'clock in the morning to drive for 7 hours, right, between cities. It's pretty good. But
where'd you play?
All over, just, you know, top to bottom, and Scotland, and Wales, and everywhere, London and stuff, Ireland too. Just small places. But it seemed to me that if you looked at Canada and you looked at the geography and you looked at the amount of people and you brought the whole scenario to someone who really didn't know anything about music, you would almost have a hard time convincing them that people were actually getting in vans and doing it. Because there's so much distance between cities. When you arrive in certain cities, there's so few people, especially people who maybe aren't fond of a certain kind of music. Maybe you're doing something different, progressive or whatever. And just your cost from going to one end to the other is... You know what I mean? I'm trying to figure out...
Yeah, if you're playing Friday, Saturday, and next week, Friday and Saturday, you're playing somewhere else. What do you do with those 5 days in between?
Sit in a donut shop.
Or drive.
Or drive. So, but what is it about, like, the spirit? Like, well, I mean...
Yeah, strive. Reaching for that brass ring, I guess. But guys just, they go from club to club. Just play in bars. Hoping to escape that one. Discover.
So do you think, you still think there's that dream that people are aspiring to?
It's always a dream. The dream goes away, the music stops.
I guess that's true. I guess, you know, probably part of it is also people just not knowing any better either, right?
It's what they do, it's what they love.
It's when you're 18, it doesn't matter, you know.
Musicians nowadays are a lot more sophisticated than, you know, you get Humber College graduates, you know. Kids aren't quitting high school because they play guitar in a band, you know.
Yeah.
They're playing guitar and then they're going to college, they're studying music, and they're coming off and they're doing session work.
Right.
And you can live very comfortably in the city of Toronto just playing sessions.
How much do you think that is also a result of maybe musicians before them having been, like, hard done by, having been, like, ripped off in terms of publishing, no disrespect, maybe bad management, bad record companies signing bad deals.
Well, to be ripped off. And I think that's the wrong choice of words. If you don't know how to do something, you hire somebody to do it. Whether it's your washing machine breaks down or your plumbing busts, somebody's got to fix it. You don't get down there yourself to fix it, normally, unless you're that way inclined. So all of a sudden you're a kid with a guitar and you're writing songs. What are you doing? Do you know anything about publishing? Somebody comes along, drops a carrot in front of them, publishers, they sign it, and that's the game.